They caught the midnight stage on Thursday, and Friday midday they were in Mesa in a buckboard rented over in Hayden's Ferry. Billy Bob told Chet that Greystone lived in the barrio north of the square and took him straight to the door. But when she in her 30s came out of the house.
Senor Kimes. How are you?
Just fine, Senora. This is my boss, Chet Burns, and his man, Jesus Martinez.
Have you been to the mine?
Yes, and we've come to settle with you if we may.
Oh, that would be a miracle. My husband is not doing so well.
They went into the adobe casa, and she seated them in chairs at the wooden table. She went into the bedroom, woke her husband, and rolled him in his wheelchair into the room.
Billy Bob, you found it.
Greystone's face lit up at the sight of him.
It wasn't exactly a mine that we found, but we did find some rubies.
It was so long ago I was there. Things go this and that way in my mind. There were three columns of tall red stone, maybe a day's ride west of the road fork.
That is where we found the stones, all right. But it was only part of the find.
I was out of water that day. Delirious, maybe. I had to go find food and water. I only found a handful of rubies.
We won't do any more mining up there. But I told Chet you were a man who needed money, that you had been honest with me. He wants to pay you.
Sure. How much was my part worth?
$40,000 in cash.
Chet used his jackknife to cut the strings on the package. Then Billy Bob unwrapped the paper from the stack of bills.
Jennifer, there is $40,000 in this package. There are some $1,000 bills in there, so the contents didn't draw any looks like a suitcase would have.
None is counterfeit?
No. It came from my bank in Prescott. The money's good.
She crossed herself twice and, white-faced in shock, looked closer in.
I never saw a bill this big before, but it feels like money.
It truly is good.
What do I need to sign?
I have the paper. Would you like me to read it?
Tears streamed down Greystone's wrinkled face.
No. God bless all of you. Jennifer and I live on the generosity of her church and food our neighbors grow for us.
We can take you or her to the bank and deposit it. I don't want you robbed.
Thank you. I can't read or write, but I can sign. And she can witness it and then take her to the bank. We owe them a small sum, but we will pay it, right?
I worried I would die before we got it paid.
How large is the bill you owe?
$60.
When you get them to the bank, Billy Bob, pay them that amount. Be sure she has a correct deposit and a receipt for the loan payoff. She won't need to take the money out of this. And break a $20 bill. That'll be her grocery money.
You are too generous.
No. When you come back, I have a purse with rubies in it for you.
A purse, too?
You men take her to the bank. I'll visit with him.
Jennifer wiped the tears from her eyes as she and the other two men walked out the door. Greystone waited until they were gone.
What do I owe Billy Bob?
He doesn't need anything. He is richer than most ranchers I know. I share my findings with my men.
Have you ever been to the gold field mines?
They around Superstition Mountain, east of Mesa?
Yes. I have a claim there that's good, but I never gave it to anyone because I figured they'd just steal the gold. I thought that drawling Texas boy Billy Bob was honest when he came the first time, and I never met anyone that honest before in my life. I know I'm talking in circles. She didn't think so. Some days I know who I am. Some days I don't have any idea who I am. I am glad you came. We don't need a paper wrote up. That mine is still there, and I'll sign it over to you today.
I won't take your mine. If it's workable, I'll pay you for it.
My wife will get the papers. I can sign them.
When Billy Bob, Jesus, and Greystone's wife came back, they were laughing.
Chet, I wish you'd been there. Seeing me deposit my money, the banker was shocked.
He asked if the man who found the Spanish gold in the Grand Canyon was you.
Yes, that too.
My dear, please go get the Goldfield gold mine claim.
What are you going to do?
Form a partnership with Chet here. He'll get the gold out.
Well, I hope he can.
That'll be another rich mine.
I won't tell you all my story, but the man I was married to, maybe living with, he said we were married, but the territory had no record of it. That man beat me up all the time. He didn't need an excuse. We were up in the mountains. No one was around.
How long have you been married to him?
I think 2 years.
How old was this man?
Maybe 40? I don't know. But Urschel came, and I left that camp with him and married him. He had this mine, and it was paying us, but he had a wreck with a wagon, and we had to close it down. We had no one to run it, and he was not well. But his claim is good.
We may go out there tomorrow. I'll see what it looks like and let you know what I'll do.
I am very grateful. I read that story to Urschel. That was in the Tucson paper, and he told me he knew where that ruby mine was at.
You think there'll be a claim jumper on your claim in Goldfield?
No telling.
That's what I thought.
Chet handed her a tobacco sack of rubies. Her eyes bulged out when she peered down into it.
Are they real?
Would I bring you glass?
I don't believe so, but you never know.
They're real. See you after we get a look at the mine.
God be with you three.
They got a hotel in Mesa that night. After breakfast, they rode out to east of Mesa. Chet had a map they had studied the afternoon before. Since Goldfield was a town and they brought no camping gear, he told them if they stayed out there, they'd get a hotel for the evening. Their horses were livery stock, but they kept them going. They reached the town at the base of the huge Superstition Mountain in mid-afternoon. The other two had a cold draft beer, and Chet had sarsaparilla. He bribed the bartender for information about the Calico mine.
Been shut down for several years. I think he ran out of vein. Wasn't worth a hill of beans for years. That's why no one's done anything with it.
Thanks.
What do you think now?
We found a fortune hanging off a bluff in the Grand Canyon. Went to the end of the trail and found a Spanish fortune and some rubies in no man's land. I want to invest some money in this Calico mine. Bring out some rocks and bust them. I don't know how to make a tunnel. We have some investment money, so we aren't using money we need to eat on. There was gold in there once. We might get lucky and find some more, and we won't starve if we don't. Let's get some supper. Find us some clothes, get them washed, take a bath, get rooms, and meet some contractors.
With all I know about mining, you could fit it into this empty mug.
Chet sent his wife a wire. Staying in Goldfield on a mine project. Tell Anita more coming in a letter. Chet, Jesus, and Billy Bob. They took a hotel room and by 9 a.m. the next day had interviewed several possible contractors in the Gold Dust Saloon at an empty card table. Jesus took notes and names on a big chief tablet. Several men wanting work went out and looked at the mine setup with Billy Bob, then came back and talked some more. Chet felt he was getting informed on mining. He was convinced some of the men were fairly straight, others braggarts, and some worthless. By 4 o'clock that afternoon, they had settled on a young man in his 20s to mine 150 feet. Jed Carlisle, age 24, had graduated from Colorado Mining School and wanted to make good. So timbers were ordered. Jed had men. They rented an air hammer run off steam and had an option to buy it if they wanted it. In 3 days, two pickaxes were pounding and dust and rocks were being hauled off to be busted and smelted. Jed showed them some rich pockets of gold they'd found that raised their hopes. Billy Bob took the livery horses back to Hayden's Ferry to save the rent and livery charges. He took a stage back that afternoon. By Saturday, they were more excited about the rich ore coming out, and they were hand-picking through the tailings. Jesus began to talk about going home for a few days and checking on his wife. Friday, Chet sent him home and told him to bring Lisa back. He sent her a wire to come back Sunday with Jesus. Chet and Jed looked at other mines for sale, but Chet wanted their current project to become more profitable and use that money to run a second one. They really had a good week. Jesus came back with Lisa, and mid-morning they had a big breakfast at the Gold Dust Saloon. In 3 days, she had a two-story house rented, and they moved in. It was the fall, and the desert temperature made the area livable. Things were really going great at the mine. Chet had full confidence in Billy Bob and Jed running the Calico mine. In the mine office, with the door shut, he warned his two superintendents the things to watch out for. High graders leaving after a shift with their pants pockets full of gold nuggets, teamsters hauling rocks to the crusher, putting aside high-grade ore, and coming back after shifts to get it. They'd caught some employees doing that and fired them. That all in place, Lisa, Chet, and Jesus took the stage back to Prescott. Chet found everyone in good health, and with things going so smoothly, he wondered why he came home. With Lisa, Jesus, Vic, and Tad to cook, and Eldon for their horse wrangler, Chet set out to check on things at the other ranches. They went by the Rustler's ranch first. Toby and Tally were doing fine. They had four of their hands married and living in the casas they built for them. They had a lovely time and were ready to move 300 cows over from the East Ranch. Chet and Thurman had plans to use the crew coming back from the Navajo drive to bring them over to Rustler's Ranch. Chet got a kick out of the thinking and planning that went into the move. Thurman and his foreman wanted their cow count down to 1,400, so Toby was going to be up to capacity at his house. Of course, that suited Chet. His range was really being utilized, with all Toby's water development on the homesteads watering the range cattle. More of his places needed that. In bed at night, Lisa told Chet that Tally was expecting number two, and she herself didn't have number one. But she also said how proud she was of Rennie helping teach at the Cherry School. They rode clear over to the East Ranch and stayed with Thurman and his wife. They were ready over there for the drive of cows to Toby and had hands borrowed from Fred. Lisa teased him that he was getting to be one of the largest cattlemen in the territory. Fred, Josie, and their new baby were next. Fred had settled into running the vast wagon wheel ranch. He and Chet discussed upping his numbers of cows and the future. He didn't need an older man to help him. Maybe a younger guy to break in. Next was Flagstaff to see Rocky, Cole, and Val, who were making it fine. Cole had to hear about everything, and Chet told them about the gold mining operation.
Man, you did good on the strip this last time, too. You know, I think the railroad is going to pick up and go when they get out of that Rio Grande Gorge down there.
They might.
We are hard-pressed to get the three new telegraph lines up before it snows. That Spencer is a whiz, isn't he?
Yes, he sure is.
Stay for a day. You and I can put our boots up and visit.
I've been gone so much that I better get home. I wanted to go see Lucy and Sarge, but I better haul my butt back home.
Good luck mining.
I may need a lot of that. One day you have gold, the next day you have sand.
I want to tell you that Rocky is still talking about his time with you and Rennie. He has never looked at a girl before she came along.
You coming to the horse races?
I will have to. I have three racehorses in training now. If Rocky doesn't win, he may never be the same again.
He'll be fine. He and the other two really worked well together on that trip.
He drove that big water wagon and mules and told me all about it.
It was one great adventure.
Something he won't ever forget.
None of them ever will.
Chet and his crew made it down to the Verde. Adam joined them and they had some laughs. He had plans to be at the races. He had two horses in training.
Is Rennie teaching school?
Oh, yes. She helps the teacher at the Cherry School.
Bet those kids are learning lots.
I bet so, too.
They were back home before lunch. Chet learned that Rennie had stayed home that day to greet them. It was a nice reunion. The house girls fixed a frosted cake. He swore that Lisa and Rennie both bawled. About bedtime, a youth rode in with a telegram. Chet heard the commotion while readying to go to bed and went out on the back steps to fetch it.
What is it?
I have a telegram from Goldfield, from the sheriff deputy in charge. Dear Mr. Burns, both your man Billy Bob and your mine superintendent Jed Carlisle were shot in an attempt to rob your business office. I have an all-points bulletin out for three suspects and think our local law may find them. Both men are in serious condition and in the hospital at Dr. Redding's house. Harold Frederick, Deputy Sheriff in Charge, Goldfield, Arizona Territory.
Oh my God! How will you answer it?
I'm gonna offer $1,000 reward for information and help finding the men responsible.
Yes, do that.
What's wrong?
Billy Bob and his mine superintendent, Jed Carlisle, were shot over at the mine.
Why shoot Billy Bob? Oh, that is terrible. He's such a nice man.
We think they had a robbery at the mine office.
What will you do, Dad?
Get Hazers and go after him tonight.
Rennie, please tell Vance to get Vic and tell him it's gonna be for days. Chet is gonna need him and Hazers. Tell him and Hazers that they're going to Goldfield. That Billy Bob and the mine superintendent were shot in a robbery. Then have Vance send someone to the stage office to hold the stage so they can get on it. Tell them it is very important they wait for them.
Turning to Chet, she continued.
You better change clothes.
Pay that boy for the outgoing telegram and give him a tip too.
He headed upstairs on the run to change clothes. It was still August, but he'd need fresh ones. His heart was pounding in his throat. He dressed quickly, then strapped on his gun and hat.
Chet, you have to be careful. I know you're mad and upset, but be cautious, because Rennie and I need you. We don't need you dead. We need you to help us run this vast empire. Do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you fine. I won't be careless. I love both of you. It'll be fine.
Chet's mind raced as he and Vic rode to Jesus. What had he forgotten? He could not even imagine what it was. At Jesus' house, Jesus kissed his wife and baby, then tore off the porch, mounted his horse, and joined Chet and Vic. When they reached the stage station, they stripped their saddles off their horses while Chet ran and bought tickets. There wasn't much sleeping on the rocking stage. How the driver ever held it on the gravel road going south under the stars, Chet never knew. But they rolled on, changed horses at various places, and drained their own systems at the stopovers. Chet had explained to Jesus all he knew about the robbery and shootout. Of course, he knew nothing about the men's wounds or even if they were alive. Past dawn, they arrived at Hayden's Ferry. They ate breakfast in a diner, then hired a buckboard, loaded their saddles and gear, and charged off into the rising sun toward Goldfield and the Purple Superstition Mountain Range. They went through miles of flat desert and irrigated farmland that spread out in orange groves, cotton fields, and milo beginning to end. They passed many farm vehicles and Indian wagons going to town or home, through the Mormon town of Mesa with its wide streets, and trotted on through the city limits. Out again, they were in the saguaro cactus-staked desert, and by evening, with the livery horses sweaty and worn down, they made Goldfield. They drove to the mine. Two men with rifles guarded the office in the golden light of sundown.
Señor Burns, Ramon and I have guarded the mine since they shot both Billy Bob and Jed. We are so glad to see you.
Are they alive?
Sí.
Where are they at?
The doctor's house, behind the Longhorn Saloon.
Thanks. You two be here a little longer. We must eat and put these worn-out horses up, and we'll be back.
Fine, fine.
He turned the team around and went to the doc's house. Chet and Jesus ran up the stairs while Vic tended to the horses and found Billy Bob awake, his head wrapped in bandages.
Chet, you made it.
Good to see you.
In the unlit room in the other bed, asleep and looking more bandaged, was Jed.
We had some pure gold that day. Those three busted in and shot us. I swear they aimed to kill us.
Billy Bob, you did all you could.
No. Damn it. We didn't do anything about it.
We can talk about it later. I know you did the best you could.
Billy Bob didn't answer. He'd slipped back into sleep. The next morning, Chet and his men were visited by a sheriff's deputy named Frisco Holden. The four went into the hotel restaurant for breakfast, and a waitress took their order, poured them coffee, and welcomed them to Goldfield.
There were three men robbed them. Jack Newman, Rodney Hart, and Jules Roberts. You'd hired them 10 days earlier. They hadn't caused any trouble. I found out Newman and Hart were in trouble over at Silver City, New Mexico. Roberts, they had never heard about.
I recall one of them, Hart. He had run a jackhammer.
More than likely a sledgehammer. He was an ex-con from Texas.
Any idea where they went?
I understood they took the Salt River Road, which goes east.
You can go to the copper mines at Globe, or turn left and take Tonto Creek to Strawberry, or go out east. Jesus and I took it once to recover a pig farmer's wife kidnapped in Hayden's Ferry.
Cold damn trip in winter.
I figured a posse wouldn't overcome them.
Well, we have a trail anyhow. I'll offer $1,000 reward for them dead or alive. Can I pay you to make the wanted posters and mail them out all over?
Cost you $50.
Handle it. Meantime, I need a mine superintendent.
What does it pay?
$100 a month for a good one.
Make it two, and I know the man.
All right, send for him. When we get up from breakfast, Jesus, buy us some horses and one pack horse with gear. Get us what supplies we need. You can meet us at the mine office. Maybe the mine men know more than he does. No telling. They have almost a week head start on us, but I bet they don't expect pursuit.
The mine man's name is August Malloy. He'll meet us at the mine. Job he had gold petered out. He knows mining real well.
I can use him if he's good.
Yeah, I wouldn't have given 10 cents for that mine of yours, but it really is producing the gold. We can go by the banker. He was impressed, too. Said you have deep pockets already.
You knew he found the Grand Canyon treasure?
I heard about that.
The second story isn't out yet. He discovered a larger treasure hoard the Spanish left up in the bluffs.
Then you guys came down here to Goldfield and reopened a dead mine and have it going full steam ahead. I'm impressed.
Tell us more of what you've learned about the robbery.
I'm told that a large amount of gold was found at the end of the week, and they were storing it in the mine office. Heard it was a surprising amount. And I guess your man thought the employees were too busy to notice it or be tempted by the gold. But obviously, those three saw it and figured they could steal it. Shift was about over. Those three had a wagon ready. They broke into the office and began shooting up everyone and everything. That's when your men were shot. Then they flung all the gold they could into the wagon bed and charged out of town. I admit we had no idea there was that much gold in boxes on the office floor. Jed was able to tell me he thought there was over $10,000 worth for them to steal. We found where they transferred most of it to pack horses about a mile east of town and rode off. I wired the sheriff in Globe and asked if they could head them off up at the junction of Tonto Creek and the Salt River. Told them the value of what they'd stolen and that they were mad dog killers. But the robbers must have detoured. His men never caught him.
Well, you obviously did all you could.
They met August Malloy at the mine. Chet was impressed that Malloy had beaten them there and was already at work inspected.
You have a safe crew and good equipment. You also bought it at a bargain. Your mine super hired some good men. Holden said you'd pay $200 a month.
Yes, and a bonus if you exceed the past month.
Fair enough.
We can get a contract over at the bank.
Works for me.
Good, let's go. Jesus come back yet, Vic?
No, I haven't seen him.
Come on, we can get the paperwork done.
All that complete, the banker aimed to wire the amount of any large expense checks for Chet's approval. After that was settled, Jesus was there with loaded pack horses, so they went by the hospital and talked to the doctor. The physician shook his head while talking about Chet's mine superintendent.
It will be a miracle if that young man survives, but he is very strong and maybe he will. The cowboy, Billy Bob, if he doesn't have any infections, will recover, but it is a long, twisted path even for him.
Were any of the robbers wounded, did they say?
Billy Bob said with certainty that he thought he had hit two of the three men, but he was hurt and in a turmoil from their attack. He said he had trusted two of those men, and they were the last ones he'd ever suspected of doing that.
Chet shook his head. Both victims were weak, and their conditions stabbed his heart. If he'd known there was such a threat, he'd never have left the pair by themselves. He felt knifed by the results of the attack on them. Greed like that stole men's hearts and minds. But the fact was, these were his men lying under sheets as white as their faces, and he took the blame for their injuries. He wanted those bastards who did this behind bars or hung by the neck until dead. They rode out of Goldfield on the dusty road that followed the Salt River into the mountains on a crooked, steep, winding path eastward. He and Jesus could recall using it another time, but he'd like to have a guide or someone more familiar with the way. Miles ahead at the forks of the Salt River and Tonto Creek, He could hope that the thieves left a sign or someone saw the direction they took. The descriptions of the individuals in the party were vague enough they might pass them on the way and not even know them. Several times along the way, Chet removed his felt hat and wiped the sweat from his face onto his sleeve. The sparse desert vegetation left great open spaces on the huge rock formations. Soon, juniper brush began to replace the mesquite and finger-like saguaros. A band of javelinas burst off into the brambles, snorting, disturbed from their siesta. Jesus's spooked horse tried to buck. Jesus held him in check, and they laughed about it. At the junction of the streams, they spoke to a young, pregnant Hispanic woman camped under a canvas sheet. Chet asked her to sell them some supper if he'd furnish the food. She agreed and told them her husband was supposed to be back. He had gone several days earlier to Globe to see about work in the mines. All she had to eat was the fish she caught, so they shared some of their food and ate some of her fish. Of course, she knew nothing about the pack train the robbers had taken through there earlier. After the meal, Chet sent Jesus to the small store close by to buy her some staples and to ask about the pack train. He returned with lots of food for her and word that the pack train answering his description went north from there. The girl was very grateful and cried. Chet dismissed her wanting to somehow repay them, but was suspicious as to why her husband left her there alone with not enough food. His men agreed with his concern. The next morning, they rode north. They talked to a whiskered old prospector coming south, riding a mule and leading a few more with packs. His name was Harris.
We're looking for three men with a pack train. They stole some gold from my mine and shot up my superintendent and guard.
The old man was packing his pipe and went over the names, nodding his head.
Newman and Hart, huh?
That's the two of them.
I ain't found much color lately. But by Jesus, I know where they are. What's it worth to you?
Name your price.
$30 would get me a long ways.
We'll call it $50. Where are they?
2 days ago, they were on Cotter Creek, gambling with guys and showing lots of color.
How far is that from here?
30 miles.
We're gonna load up right now. You draw Jesus here a map in the dirt.
I can sure do that.
Vic and Chet began loading the horses.
Can you believe that?
I damn sure think that's a miracle.
Bigger miracle is finding the Spanish treasure.
Oh, I agree.
They had the animals loaded, and Chet couldn't stop thinking about the girl.
Harris, there's a pregnant girl camped by herself down there at the fork in the streams. I want you to take her $20 and be sure she's all right. I have a deep concern her husband dumped her.
What if she's gone?
The 20 is yours.
Hellfire. What is her name?
She's a teen and pregnant. You can't miss her.
If she's there, I'll pay her.
Good. I want those crooks.
The Cotter Creek handmade sign nailed to a post was barely visible in the sundown. They decided that close they'd make a dry camp and hustle in there in the morning. Horses hobbled, they ate jerky, and slept some. Before dawn peached the eastern horizon, they were in the saddle and headed up the deep draw headed for the camp. Over two mountain ranges, mid-morning, they smelled the wood smoke and soon saw the camp of tents and some shacks made of lumber taken from old buildings. Chet considered it a typical prospector's camp. The residents all needed baths, and many were sucking on crock jars of Mountain Dew as they staggered around. An assortment of Indian squaws and Hispanic women tended fires, made food, and dodged drunks anxious to kiss or fondle them. One of the women stopped Chet.
You need a woman, hombre?
He dismounted.
I need Jack Newman. You know him?
What is he worth to you?
$20.
Well, that I show you him and my body.
He'll do just fine.
Both Jesus and Vic had their rifles out and scouted the crowd for any movement toward them. Chet gave them a follow-us head toss, and they parted the crowd, moving forward with their horses and pack animals. The crowd gave them dirty looks, but the woman he'd hired kept walking, leading the way through the camp and wood smoke. She gestured with her hand out.
Here is his house.
Chet handed her a gold $20 piece and checked the rifle's chamber. The crowd began to back away, realizing his purpose was not going to be a friendly reunion between him and Newman. Someone flung the canvas flap back, buttoning his fly as he stomped out of the crude structure.
Now who in the hell?
The muzzle of Chet's Winchester stuck in his face.
Jack Newman?
No, sir. I'm Jules Roberts.
Chet slashed him in the face with the rifle butt, and he went down hard. Jesus had spurred his horse around the wall tent, and Chet heard him shout,
"Stop!"
Then the .44 caliber blast from back there made many hit the ground.
You sons of bitches!
Vic was there and had the screaming Roberts, spitting bloody teeth, by the collar as his other hand waved Chet aside. His gun barrel at his waist and cocked, Chet stepped into the tent. He saw the man on the cot reach for the holstered pistol on the floor as the naked woman, screaming, fell off the cot on the other side. The black powder gun smoke boiled up in the room. The woman was gone, and the man, lying on his back, clutched his bloody wrist where Chet had shot him. Chet's ears were ringing from the shot. The fumes burned his nostrils, and smoke made his eyes water. He grasped the screaming Newman by the collar with his left hand and dragged him outside, next to Roberts. Jesus came around the tent on the side, walking his spooked horse and dragging Rodney Hart by his belt.
Any more?
I think we got them all.
Where's the gold you stole?
We ain't got any gold.
You want more loose teeth?
Hell no. It's in the tent.
Get your ass up and get it.
I can't. Hurt too much.
You're gonna hurt worse than that.
Vic gave him a swift kick to his side, and the man, on his hands and knees, scurried inside the tent. Vic followed.
Part of it's here!
Good, thanks.
Chet looked to the woman, his guide, who was wrapping up Newman's bloody arm. When she had his arm wrapped, she rose and held out her palm.
20 more.
Done. Now, get us some food. A couple of you boys here, round up our horses and pack horses.
Then he shoved his rifle in the boot. There was quite a lot of the gold left. His men filled the panniers on the pack horse with it and stuck the rest of the stuff into bags on their horses. The job completed, Chet spoke to the crowd.
These three men robbed my mine office and shot up my men. I aim to take them back to Goldfield for trial.
Hang their asses!
Men, I did that one time. Not that they didn't deserve it. Not that they weren't as bad an outfit as these outlaws. But prosecution and prison sentencing shows Arizona has the right to be a state. I want that to happen. My name's Chet Burns. I live and ranch at Prescott Valley. You need a meal or a cot to sleep on. We never turn anyone with manners away.
Didn't you find some Spanish treasure in the Grand Canyon?
Yes, my men and I found it.
All I found up there in those caves was batshit.
That's all I found, too. Except if one was golden jewels.
The old man threw down his hat and stomped on it.
By damn, I forgot to look in that one.
After they ate, they loaded the three handcuffed outlaws on their horses and rode back to the main road and south. They took the left fork in the road to check on their friend down where the streams forked. Chet wanted to be sure she was all right. She met them about sundown.
No husband?
No, I guess he left me. I thought he loved me.
What's your name?
Maria Consuela.
Maria, these men work for me on my ranch. Come to us. I'll send a wagon for you. I have many single men who need wives. Don't worry. They'll love your baby too.
I have had enough fish.
Back in Goldfield, he hired a man with a wagon to get her and bring her into the town. When she arrived, Chet had the doctor check her. The doctor told Chet she was doing well. That night, Jed died. On crutches, Billy Bob stood in the cemetery with wet eyes.
I wish it had been me instead. Jed was such a smart man.
No, he wished for you to become one of my grand ranch foremen.
Jed liked his new mine superintendent. Mine was really putting out the gold. He thanked the man, told him he'd be in touch, and to send a wire if he had an emergency. With that fixed, they took a buggy back to Hayden's Ferry. Chet wired his wife they'd be up there at midnight and bring two buckboards. They made it to the ferry. The night was cool compared to the desert temperatures they were getting used to. When he introduced the new girl, Lisa kissed her and hugged her. Rennie was along and told him, aside, she had the fastest horse in Arizona and the race was Sunday. Sunday, at the fairgrounds, they all had lunch at their pavilion. Several of the ranch family members were there for the noon meal. Bo, his wife and kids, Tanner, wife and babies, Cole and Val came with Rocky, and Adam came with Victor and Reba. Plus, half a thousand other folks. Toby and Tally even came down. Tom and Millie, too. Jesus and Anita were there, and Vic brought Maria. Chet teased the three teens that he dare not cheer for any of them. At the end of the second race, the announcer said the next race coming up was a simple, friendly, family affair. Everyone laughed. The starting pistol set them off. All three horses came out of the gates like professional steeds. Rocky had it by the nose at the halfway post. Then, as Chet watched, Rennie leaned over and whispered something in her horse's ear. Next, Chet saw her mount speed away, and she won by a length. Afterward, when it was all quiet and the horses had been cooled down, as Chet was fixing to let the ranch boy lead her winning horse back home, he turned to Rennie and asked her what she said to her pony to make him run so fast.
You won't get mad?
I won't get mad.
Get the hell out of here. We're losing.
You said the right thing.
Burns Family Ranch 11, Sharpshooter by Dusty Richards is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2018, Dusty Richards. Production copyright 2026, Graphic Audio LLC. Narrated by Matthew Bassett. Featuring Scott McCormick as Chet Burns, Emlyn McFarland as Lisa Burns, and John Vertulo as Cole Emerson. With additional performances by Steve Wanall, Rainer Gabriel, Matthew Schley, Tyler Hirchuk, Aaron Lynn, Paul Reisman, Jonathan Church, Joey Sorlis, Ryan Haugen, Rob Marrera, Nazia Chaudhry, Patrick Boylan, Chris Stinson, Nusha Navab, Donald Guzzi, Keith Richards, Matthew Pauly, Danny Gavigan, Bradley Foster Smith, Terrence Aselford, Christopher Walker, Tia Shearer, Nick DePinto, Evan Casey, Stephen Carpenter, Delton Engelsorel, Drew Copas, Ken Jackson, Rob McFadgen, Kaylee Rivera, Laura C. Harris, Yasmin Toison, Eric Messner, Nora Schrotti, Wynn Delano, Richard Rowan, Marnie Penning, Michael Glenn, Sasha Olenek, Todd Schofield, James Konacek, Michael John Casey, Jameson Hunt, Christopher Williams, Colleen Delaney, Matthew Bassett, and Jillian Levine Sisson. Adapted for graphic audio by Matthew Bassett. Directed by Matthew Bassett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Jameson Hunt. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. If you enjoyed Burns Family Ranch 11, Sharpshooter, you may also enjoy Smoke Jensen, The Beginning, Book 6, Angry Land. Keep listening for a preview of Angry Land in rip-roaring graphic audio.
Smoke, what are we gonna do? This is gonna ruin us.
Yeah. Nobody's going to be ruined. Those killers will be brought to justice.
How can you know that? You trust those Kansas lawmen to find them?
I'll trust them until they give me a reason not to. But I'm not relying on them. I'm going after the men responsible for this myself.
Your wife's hurt. That's why you didn't go with the cows in the first place.
The sound of Sally's cane thumping on the planks made all the men look around as she emerged from the house.
I'm fine. And I'm certainly not going to stop Smoke from tracking down those outlaws and seeing to it that they get what's coming to them. If anyone can recover that stolen herd, it's him.
Nobody's gonna argue with that. Didn't mean to imply otherwise. Some of us can go with you if you want, Smoke.
No, you men are going to have your hands full keeping things going on your spreads. I'll need to move pretty fast, and I can do that better by myself.
Yeah, the trail's getting colder with every minute that goes by, I reckon. But that's a big gang, Smoke. Mighty heavy odds against you, even if you do manage to locate them.
I'll figure out a way to handle the odds. Don't worry about that.
None of the men appeared to doubt it. They had all heard the stories about Smoke, how he'd ridden alone into an outlawed town and killed 19 hardened gun wolves in one epic battle, how he had faced up to overwhelming odds again and again and always emerged triumphant.
I tried to tell him he should take Pearlie with him anyway.
Pearlie's too important to the Sugarloaf. I'll rest a lot easier at night knowing he's here taking care of things.
Let's say you're able to recover those cattle. How will you get them to Abilene?
There are always plenty of cowboys around over there. They come up with the herds from Texas and don't want to head home yet, or they're figuring out on getting a job somewhere else. It shouldn't be hard to round up a crew that can help me handle the herd.
Most of those Texas boys are pretty gun-handy, too, if you need help dealing with the skunks who held up that train. And there's nobody I'd rather count on to see that justice is done. Good luck to you, Smoke.
Ben Harper stuck out his hand. Smoke was moved as each man in turn stepped up to clasp his hand and wish him well. It had been his plan they had agreed to in the first place, risking everything they had to do so. He owed it to each and every one of them to recover those rustled cattle if he could. He would do everything in his power to accomplish that. And if it took getting a hand from some tough, fast-talking Texas hombres, well, that was all right, too.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romantasy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social media platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.